All in preparation for the challenges that lie ahead. This is a show that feeds the mind with inspiration and truth on the issues of the day. If it's important to your life, you'll find it here. Hosted by Malcolm Out Loud.
Do you remember George Orwell, 1984? I remember that book. I remember reading that book as a lad and thinking about the police state. You know, where we were going to be in 1984. I guess I read that book in the 70s somewhere. Now, you know, that book was published, actually, and I didn't remember this, but in 1949. So listen, I'm not old enough to be back in 19. I'm too young for that. So I read it, you know, as a really, really young kid in the 70s. How's that? I'll give you that much. But George Orwell, 1984, we all thought, oh, police state. Is that where we're headed? Yeah, that's where those images of Big Brother, Uncle Sam, all of that came from. All kind of came from that George Orwell era. Yeah. Well, I wonder today, could we be heading down that road? Is that where we're headed? Well, the Cybersecurity Act was approved and passed through at the end of the year. It became very, very controversial for a lot of reasons I'm going to get into here in just a moment here. But I want to stay on George Orwell a moment. You know, it was an interesting read, reading George Orwell as a kid. You know, I remember the book. I've read it a couple of times. I remember it being very sensationalized, very interesting. But you know, a more central problem with using Orwell, as now everybody compares Orwell with the NSA, and, you know, again, police state, Big Brother's watching. We're not in a police state, my friends. That's not where we're at today. It's just not that way. We're blessed. We're blessed to live in the country, in a land that we are. In many ways, we don't count our blessings enough, really and truly. We don't. You know, but again, Orwell imagined not just a totalitarian state, but a totalizing one. You know, the party in 1984 controlled everything. It watched everyone. Remember, the people in the 1984 chapter, people had no rights. They had no power. Even language and metaphors themselves were officially vetted by the state. It's not where we are today. It's not the world we live in, clearly. So we didn't really become George Orwell 1984. And, you know, I have to remember that because, you know, honestly, when we started talking about, you know, NSA and Edward Snowden and all that, my mind went right back to 1984. And, you know, as a whole, I remember that book being very controlling, that whole world, you know. But using Orwell to understand NSA spying, that's just, it's a big distortion. That's not even close, really. So the question today becomes, how much government is too much government when it comes to your privacy? How much are you willing to take, right? That is the question we have to ask ourselves. My friends, we're working into a whole new world, of drones and terrorism and, you know, iSpy and hacking and computer. I mean, this is like, you couldn't even imagine this stuff. You know, I remember watching some of the futuristic movies back, I don't know, maybe a couple of decades ago and, you know, thinking through, wow, that would never happen. And by golly, we're starting to see some of that stuff happen, quite frankly. You're starting to see a lot of the drones in the news and what's going on there. And, you know, it kind of gives you pause a little bit as to what kind of a world are we not only living in, but what are we going to leave for our kids, our children, and our grandchildren? You know, what kind of world will that be, I wonder? Well, you know, the Fourth Amendment. Well, the Fourth Amendment, you know, hey, it was originally it was enforced at the notion that our home was our castle. It was our space, our privacy. It was ours. You know, Big Brother, Uncle Sam, Frito Fred, none of them could come in and mess with us. It was our castle. It's our home. I think of Jackie Gleason when I hear castle. I think you remember Jackie Gleason, the Honeymooners, you know? This is my castle, Jane. What was it, June? I guess it was Jane, wasn't it? I don't know. But, you know, we are protected from unreasonable searches and seizures by the government, you know, right? Search warrants, stop and frisk, safety inspections, wiretaps, surveillance of any kind. I mean, that's the Fourth Amendment. Well, the Fourth Amendment is the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Well, that's the Fourth Amendment. You know, we're blessed to live in a country where we have these amendments. We have a Bill of Rights. We have a Constitution. We have freedom. And we don't count our blessings enough, really. We really don't. But you take a look at this Fourth Amendment here. And no warrant shall issue. That's but upon probable cause. That really is the sticking point of the Fourth Amendment and the NSA and the arguments that a lot of politicians are having. Many politicians are saying, hey, you got some bad guys? Go get a warrant. Go get in front of a judge. Then on the other side, you have the other argument about, well, but, you know, you got a lot of terrorists running out there. Here's the thing, my friends. I don't think we can destroy our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, throw these amendments away on the basis of being in fear and being that terror is the new world order. And somehow that's going to strip our constitutional rights from us? I don't think so. The bigger problem is this. We don't trust government. You know, if we trusted government, this wouldn't be half an argument. Really, it wouldn't. We'd be able to live with this thing. We would. Nobody would be that hot. If we really, really trusted government to do the right thing, we could live with this. We could live with the whole NSA. We could live with the new, you know, Cybersecurity Act that was passed at the end of the year. We'd be okay with it. But that's not the case. It's not the case. Simply don't trust government. So the questions become, what does this bill mean to you and I, you know? And will this be the bill we've seen passed at the end of the year, is that the final bill or will it be modified again? Yeah, I wonder about that. Well, we're going to bring on today our technology expert, Bob Francis, Milford Communications Partners. Bob is just a wealth of knowledge. It's always good to have him on. I think you'll enjoy hearing what he's got to say about this. He's going to chime in. And also, I want to ask him, there's so much hacking going on right now. I'm so tired every day of hearing somebody else being screwed or ripped off from this hacking business. What makes a good password? Once and for all, I want to know what makes a good password. I'm going to ask Bob. I'm going to put him on the spot. Tell him to tell us, how do we get better passwords? I think we all need to know. We look forward to having you here today. We'll be right back after the break. Well, it was another bill, 3 a.m. overnight, while everybody's sleeping. This was the Cybersecurity Act, was jammed into a budget bill at the very end of the year. Became known as the Omnibus Bill. And, you know, it's one of these things, again, ninth inning. They're always pushing things through the agenda. And this passed by a pretty wide margin, my friends. The House passed this by a 316 to 113 vote. The Senate also had a pretty wide majority here, 65 to 33 majority. Now, interestingly enough, not all the politicians and not all Democrats were for this. So back and forth we went. I'll give you an example. Representative Zoe Loughran out of California, a Democrat now, said she voted against it because it included the controversial cybersecurity bill that she called a surveillance tool without sufficient protections for data privacy, she says. And I'll go on to say to you, she says, this so-called cybersecurity legislation was inserted into a must-pass on Obamnibus at the 11th hour without debate. That's become all too common now, folks. The protective measures that such a bill should have, including those I believe the Constitution requires, were removed. So again, there's the problem. Others, like Senator Dianne Feinstein, another Democrat out of California, said, you know, she says, in short, this is a strong bill, makes an important first step to address a significant drain in our economy and threat to our national security. So here with us to join and weigh in on this, technology expert Bob Francis, back with us here. Again, Bob Francis, Milford Communications Partners. He's a founder and managing director of Jefferson Partners out of Washington, D.C. And he, again, focuses on satellite, internet, multimedia, wireless technologies. And Bob, I wanted to get your perspective on this because, you know, I've drilled down, I've read through a lot of the pieces on this, and you have about as many people that seem to be for it as are against it. What's your take on it? Is this a good thing for us, or is this another problem bill?
Well, I think it was intended to be something that Congress couldn't pass on their own. In other words, specifically, the Congress has been unwilling, it seems, to renew the Patriot Act in the full and give NSA the full range of surveillance that it wanted. So this is a way to accomplish much of that by passing the responsibility off to the telephone companies. So instead of NSA gathering the information and storing it, the telephone companies and the internet providers are required to cover it and recover it and store it, and they do, and they normally do that for billing purposes anyhow.
Right.
And now they are required simply to hold it for a longer period of time for sure and make it available under a request from the government, not necessarily a warrant.
Right. You know, the Silicon Valley companies and really all of these tech companies have been very, very apprehensive. You and I have touched on this before about giving all this information over, mostly because of the legal liability protections, you know, Bob, that are they're worried about lawsuits and problems there. So here's what they did with the Cybersecurity Act here of 2015, they're calling it. There's a Section 106, Protection from Liability. I don't know if you've seen this, but sharing or receipt of cyber threat indicators, no cause of action shall lie or be maintained in any court against any private entity, and such action shall be promptly dismissed. Interesting, huh?
Well, it is. And of course, that's, again, Congress' intent is to shield the carriers so that they will make available the information they have. Otherwise, they'll be able to say, well, wait a minute. We would get into far more trouble with the customers and the public than we will with government. You just have to take us to court. I think, actually, that in the long run, this bill will be severely modified in the new Congress, because I think there's been that much complaint about it from all sides. And as you pointed out earlier, this was snuck into the omnibus bill at 3 in the morning. No one had a chance to read it, totally secret, and has irritated a lot of members of Congress on both sides of the aisle.
You know, Bob, one of the things I'm a little confused on, you know, this past year here was a lot of conversation. You remember when the NSA, the court ruled the NSA program was illegal. Now, a lot of people were, and probably you included, I'm thinking, but you tell me, were kind of elated at the fact that Americans, we start to get our privacy back more. But then a lot of the politicians, including presidential candidates like Marco Rubio and others, started to say, wait a minute, this is not a good deal because, you know, this privacy you're getting back is going to not allow the government to have the proper information to vet all of the data out there and to be able to catch the bad guys. But you remember this whole thing with the court ruling the NSA. So what I'm asking now is, that happened back around May or June of 2015. Now that this has happened at the end of the year, how does this relate to that?
Well, of course, the key thing that the government wants is the metadata. They want to know that you and I communicated. And with that information, they can begin to build a case that says there's probably something going on that we ought to watch Bob Francis about. So that information was denied them under the most recent ruling. You know, that expired within the last few weeks. I've forgotten the exact date. Mm-hmm. But their authority to gather that information expired. In my opinion, this Cybersecurity Act was intended to give the NSA and other governmental agencies like the FBI a secondary way of gathering that information. Now, what does it mean for you and I? What it really means is that our information will be stored now by the telephone companies or the ISPs. My concern, of course, is that I'm not a threat to the government and not a terrorist. So why should my information be even made available to government and stored? And the way I have of preventing that is to use encryption technology.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that lately, and a lot of people are, in fact, the government, I've seen a lot of stories now where they're trying to find ways to bust into this encryption business. They don't like it, do they, Bob?
No, they really don't, and I can understand their concern.
Right.
However, you know, as the Apple organization has said, once you and I encrypt our communications at our ends, then it cannot be read by Apple or any other ISP or anyone of that matter, for that matter, between us. Mm-hmm. So that is clearly a secure method of communications that will cause great concern in terms of being able to hear what we said. It doesn't keep them from knowing the metadata. And this is the point I keep coming back to.
So even if you're encrypted, they still get the metadata, you're saying?
Well, absolutely. They know that you and I communicated.
I see.
They have no way of knowing what we said. Now, one of the things that's concerning to me is they're now talking that, well, let's put back doors into the software. Let's force the companies to put in a back door. Well, as others have said, if you have a back door, it can be used for, by both the good people and the bad people.
Right.
You can't have a back door just for good people. Back doors are back doors.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens with this. Obviously, you're saying you think it's going to be they're going to take it up again and do something with it. I'll be curious to see if they do that, because this act right now is in effect for 10 years if nobody touches it, till September 30th, 2025, and interesting enough. So we'll keep monitoring and see. Hey, listen, one other thing I want to talk to you about is interesting at the end of the day here. We're always talking about protecting ourselves, and it seems some of the numbers I'm looking at here, Americans are not doing enough to protect their privacy online, is what a lot of the survey research firms are saying. Listen to this stat here, Bob. Nearly every American consumer, how about 98%, believe that they are creating safe passwords. But a recent study shows that only 6% are actually doing so. Okay, so what's happening is they're not using a lot of symbols. They're using just basic letters and numbers. What's the key to creating a great password?
Well, the key is to use a totally random sequence of numbers, letters, and symbols that are not in any combination or in any way a word that would be in a dictionary or would be easily detected by a computer doing a dictionary search. So that's why it's important to use some of the new software programs that generate these random sequences that would be extremely difficult to break. So many of us, and I'm guilty of it myself, use either words, which are easy to, you know, with a computer, it's easy to track the dictionary. It'll do a dictionary lookup on every word in the dictionary. So just saying Main Street, for example, that's not a good password, or using your address.
Right, or birth dates or things like that. In fact, they're saying that passwords should be no less than 16 characters with a mixture of characters, numbers, symbols, etc. But I don't think a lot of us are doing that, huh?
A lot of us are not, but that's absolutely correct. The longer the password, the more secure it is, and the more difficult it would be for any computer to break that password.
And, of course, then it's also a lot of people have troubles remembering the passwords, but that's a whole other story. You got to track yourself and keep all these things down. Everything today seems to be password-driven. But anyways, Bob, thank you for being with me here. And, again, you can find out more about Bob at MilfordCommunications.com. Thanks for chiming in here, buddy. Hey, it's Malcolm Allah. We'll be right back right after the break here. Well, you just know we're headed into the future, and we're headed in there with all kinds of technological advances. It's pretty amazing when you think about all the technology that's coming our way. And, you know, I wonder if I could fast forward ahead what we will look like 100 years from now. You know, what will we look like in 2116? Well, we've been hearing a lot about the drones and stuff, but here's another one. Apple goes ahead and they buy a new startup that will help it read facial expressions. Now, you know where all this is going. You're not going to be able to do anything. You're going to be able to look at anybody. You're not going to be able to... everything's going to be out in the open. There'll be nothing that will be private anymore. So this new... they want their devices, first of all, to understand the emotional states of human beings. And, you know, I wonder, some human beings, I don't know that we want to know their emotional states, quite frankly, but that's what's happening here with this this new software. So they bought a new company called Emotient, and it's a small firm at the time, but they've got some real interesting technology. The software now will read the facial expressions of people and devices, and it relates to their emotional states. So it computes all of that. The software can analyze video of a room full of people, for instance, and it can classify the expressions on every face in the room. Believe it or not, they're already starting to use this to measure consumers' reactions to advertisements. You can see that would be a huge, huge bonus for an ad agency to be able to use to measure the expressions on faces. Are you kidding me? That'd be worth a fortune. And they're starting to use that already in that realm. Now, emotion is the leader in emotion detection and sentiment analysis, they call it. It's part of a neuromarketing wave that's driving, and they say it's taken a quantum leap in customer understanding. Well, the technology has already been used again by retail sales trainees. Some of these folks are wearing, you know, that Google Glass that was out to understand the impact of their sales pitches on consumers. That's a big deal for big companies. They want to know how people are. You're seeing that also in the political field a lot. You know how they do those focus groups and stuff, and they want to know what everybody's saying and thinking, and they measure with all these charts and graphs how people are relating. It's amazing what you can find out now. It's just mind-blowing. As technology keeps moving forward, you wonder what's going to happen next, you know? They're saying Apple might even use the technology to understand consumer responses to mobile ads, that they're looking at doing that are placed through their iAds platform as sort of a big bonus to do advertising with them. Well, they acquired this startup. They're calling it an AI, artificial intelligence startup. They also acquired Perceptio and Vocal IQ. And this is technology that would likely be used to make Apple's personal assistant Siri. You know Siri? You know that Siri on your iPhone and stuff? And it will relate better, they say, with humans. I know the kids have a hell of a time with that Siri, telling jokes and going back and forth and stuff. And you got to get into the habit of using it. What I use it for is like a sports game, to find out what the sports score of a game, or sometimes the weather quickly. But I don't use it for a lot of real, you know, focused questions and things like that, because I don't know. I always find it screws up. It always says, okay, I'll send you over to the web or something, and, you know, I just don't find it useful. Well, Apple's been buying these smaller technology companies, and they're saying they're hush-hush. You know, one thing about Apple is they are very hush-hush. They generally don't discuss any of their purpose or plans, and they're not going to do that here either. But that's one of the big things that's happening in this world, again, of cyberness that we're headed in. And, you know, I've been telling you about these drones. I've been telling you about Amazon with the products. We've talked about that. I've talked about Google. Well, now we know it's going to be more widespread. I'm waiting for it to deliver my latte in the afternoon, you know, or a cappuccino, huh? Or maybe that pizza you want in the evening. Well, there is an insurance company, Acuity. They're a large firm. I believe they're based on the Midwest somewhere. It's Wisconsin or something like that. And they're a national firm, but they are using drones already in their fleet. And they were approved by this. You have to be approved by the FAA. As Google was, and I believe Amazon was as well, I'm pretty sure, you know. And they plan to add more of these drones in the coming months. So let me tell you what they're going to do with this. Okay, so they say here, the official statement from their vice president, Acuity recognizes the importance of drone technology in claims, underwriting, and many other facets of the insurance process. Drones will allow on-site personnel to survey a site faster and safer than the usual physical inspection. So you can just imagine this now, folks. You're on a highway, you had an accident or something, you need a quick estimate or something. All of a sudden, out of the sky, some little creature comes in. It's a drone. It bzzz, and it just lands right down near you, flies down, and, you know, hopefully it misses you and doesn't hit you, but it lands down there, and then all of a sudden, arms start coming out of the equipment and things turn around and spiral and photographs are taken, and wow, that's where we're headed maybe, yeah? And then, of course, you can't really talk to the drone. You probably want to tell it to, you know, can I get my claim right away or something? But I'm sure they'll figure that out too. They'll probably have a tape recorder there or something and say, do you have any comments, Mr. Jones? Speak up now, please. Or did you pay your bill last month, you know? They'll probably start talking to you as well, maybe, I don't know. But they're going to use this for video, still imagery, collecting data, all of that sort of thing is what they're going to do. And so the FAA permits all this now. You've got to go through them at this point. But, you know, part of the discussion on a bigger scale is regulations. How is the FAA going to regulate all of this? I don't know how it's going to. I'm a little concerned with this whole drone business. I don't know how it's going to work, you know. I mean, how do you, everyone wants it. I mean, all right, so you got people doing it for pleasure. You got, you know, obviously it's a great little pleasure toy to play with drones flying all over the place. Sure, sure, you got that going on, okay? Now you've got, you know, insurance companies and book companies and all kinds of companies and the commercialization of the drone business. That's definitely, that's out there already. That's happening. So you got all that. And then you got the bigger problem, I think, and this is a really big problem, is the bad folks using it. What they can attach to a drone, you know, can they attach, and I understand they're already doing that, attaching guns and ammunition and things of that nature. I mean, cameras are a given. They're already using cameras on ski slopes, if you will. Yeah. And they're using them in sporting events and things like that. Yeah, absolutely. They're already being used in a lot of areas. So, you know, you see that happening and you just wonder where this is all going. Where's this all going now? Well, you know, it's interesting, as we talked earlier with Bob Francis, and we talk about the Cybersecurity Act, and you wonder how many more, you just know there's going to have to be more regulations and more guidance on all this stuff. Or the other big problem is a lot of these drones have been coming a lot, a tremendous amount of near misses with our planes, our airlines. That's another big problem. Is they could hit our airlines. And so, you've got rules. You're not supposed to be within so many miles of the airport, but that doesn't mean people listen. It certainly doesn't mean the bad guys are going to listen either. That's for damn sure, because they don't pay attention to any laws or regulations anyway. But I'm talking about even the good people are getting lost in all of this. So anyways, I just wonder where we're all going with all of it. It's cyberness, cyber era. That's what we're in. And the Cybersecurity Act and privacy. And there is no more privacy, my friends. Well, coming up after the break, I want you to meet a very special lady, Venus Jones, and we're going to talk to her. She's a spoken word artist, very fascinating lady. She writes poetry, emulates real life. She does it in a very interesting way. We'll be right back right after the break. You know, Venus Jones is one of those people you meet who's just, you just know it immediately, folks. She's full of life. And I mean, full of love too, but just full of life. And it's just somebody, there's certain people you just want to engage with them. You want to know what they're thinking. You want to know what they're saying. And that's what I like about you, Venus. I just really enjoy having you on here. This piece she wrote, I believe about 10 years ago, it's called Healthy Seeds. Healthy Seeds. And it's all about reaping what you sow. It starts off and it gets into a lot of different chapters. It's in her book, She Rose, on a journey from girl to goddess. But again, I just was looking forward to having Venus on to talk about some of this because her work is so relatable to real life. Venus, I'm going to stop here and be quiet a minute. I want you to deliver, if you would, the next couple of paragraphs that are big. And it really, to me, addresses our cultural diversity and who we are as a people. So if you would, take the next couple of paragraphs and we'll talk about it, please.
Tell them, you were made in the image of unlimited love. And no one can steal your joy. You can give it to them, but they can't keep it. No man, no woman, no girl, no boy. True joy, you will never lack when you say African, Jew, Irish, Indian. I'm proud of that. Pull out that toxic weed, cut them some slack, throw it away and bounce right back. You are a creator, full of vibrant visions, mysterious and grand. With God as your guide, your burdens feel lighter than each grain of sand.
But you're so gifted. I'm just blown away when I hear you and the way you deliver these things. With God as your guide, your burdens feel lighter with each grain of sand. That's a tall order. That's a big line, man. That's a big line. And we talk a lot about faith on this platform. Yeah. And I just love the fact that you have that line in there.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, when you pull out that toxic weed, cut them some slack, and you talk about African, Jew, Irish, Indian, I'm proud of that. One of the things that are important to me, Venus, on our platform is our cultural diversity and getting more people to embrace our cultural diversity and who we are as a people, which I think is America's greatest strength, is the fact that we are so unique here. What do you say to that? What are your thoughts in this realm?
Wow. Oh, wow. I think you're talking to someone who loves diversity, though. You're talking to someone who doesn't mind being uncomfortable and learning new things. I think some people get uncomfortable when they're around someone who is not like them.
That is so true. That is so true. But that's when you learn. When you're different is when you learn.
Yes, that's the exciting part. And you have to be willing if you want to be joyful. As it says here, true joy will never lack. When you can say that you're proud of this, but obviously this person wouldn't have been even exposed to that type of energy or someone saying that they're different. And if they weren't willing to be around that, sometimes we as quote unquote the underserved or marginalized, because some people don't like the word minority, and it may not even necessarily be true for certain groups now. But the point is, when you are come from the group that is has a smaller percentage in the room, there is going to be people who are going to look at you as if you need to blend. You need to be like us.
That's it. What we're talking about here is being different. We're talking about being different. Now, you know, Venus, that I come from Pluto, remember?
Yes.
So you talk about being different. It doesn't matter who you have in the room. I'm the screwiest person there is. I'm as odd as they get. You know, I mean, here's a guy who comes from a foreign planet, first of all, who's, you know, dropped me here. That's been my story for years. I'm sticking to it, man. But, you know,
I didn't catch that, Malcolm. You said you came from what kind of planet?
Yeah, a different planet. A totally different girl. Being unique. Listen, I am about celebrating our uniquenesses. Mm-hmm. I'm about standing up as people, as who we are. I like the fact that we're different, Venus. I mean, you are a bit of an oddball. You're kind of weird, Venus. And you are, girl, and I'm double weird. I'm twice as weird as you are. How's that?
Weird is a good thing sometimes. It means that, you know, there was an acronym, wonderful, intelligent, I don't know, empowered. I can make up one right now off the spot.
You probably could.
Wriggle and daring. How about that?
But you know, the thing I want people to realize or take from this is that embrace your differences, my friends. Embrace your uniqueness. Embrace who you are. Don't run from that. You know, as a kid, I was always more of a leader than a follower. I'm talking about as a young man now. And so I never got involved in bad, you know, I never got involved in crime or drugs or things like that because I didn't follow. And I was always a little different, always a little odd, a little weird. But I think people relate to that. The point is you got to embrace who you are and embrace your differences. It's what makes each of us special. And I'll be honest with you, I think that's what God wants. I think he made us this way intentionally, Venus.
Yeah, I saw a meme once that said, we can enjoy the diversity of so many other species but our own. And it showed pictures of how we were like awing over all of the different color fish and awing over all of the different color cats and dogs.
Isn't that true? Isn't that so true, though, man?
It's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's right. There's so much bigotry and racism in the world. For whatever reason, I do not know. I never understood that. I missed that day in class somehow. I never understood why people are that way. But anyways, I really like this because you're breaking it down here and talking about the fact that, you know what? We need to be proud of who we are. We need to be proud of our differences. And I love the last line of that particular paragraph. With God as your guide, your burdens feel lighter than each grain of sand.
Yeah.
I mean, that says a lot to me, Venus, you know.
And for those who don't believe or who are non-believers, even if you can think of yourself as your highest self, with your highest self as your guide, right? Your burdens can feel lighter. But you have to be in touch with your source.
No, you do. You have to be in touch with your source and be in touch with who you are. Yeah. I think that's what's important for all of us. You know, part of my mission here is to just help people, is to get people to see some of this stuff. And that's why when I created the show here, and we said this is real life, it was really to break it down for folks to understand. I really, really like your work. Venus, also, why don't we pause a moment here, just a moment here. What's your website as well so I can give it out to folks?
Sure. It's my name, Venus Like the Planet. Maybe the one that you're from.
I'm from Pluto, not Venus.
Oh, I forgot. Okay.
Women are from Venus. Men are from Pluto. Go ahead.
Venus Jones, like keeping up with the Joneses.com.
Well, all right. It's VenusJones.com. You can look her up right there, folks. And I encourage you to check out her work. She Rose is the book. And again, her poetry is just fantastic. It emulates real life. I think you'll enjoy her. You know, also on the platform, I want to bring your attention to a piece that I have on brinkofgreatness.com. I think you'll enjoy this. Overcoming adversity in your relationships. It's interesting for a few reasons. It gets into various tips and things of how for us to excel in our relationships, but also how to turn adversity into your relationships into an advantage. So I want to give you these 9 tips. I'm going to put them up on the Twitter feed for you as always. And the first one, some people will not want you to succeed. When you do succeed, those same people will exert great energy to tear you down. You know, this fundamentally is a big problem in our life. We see that people, it's jealousy. It just comes back to jealousy in relationships. It never works. The second one on this list, choose the people you hang with most carefully. This will be one of the most significant decisions you'll make throughout your life. I talk about this all the time, but it's because, you know, positive attracts positive, negative attracts negative. You've got to be careful. Third one, the only relationships that matter are those that result in a win-win. One-sided relationships almost never work. And this really is about, you know, it can't be a take, 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 take. It's got to be a compromise. You got to have a win-win-win relationship. It's when everybody wins something out of the relationship. Very, very important. The fourth is surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. This one's hard to do, actually, but it's an important one. Now, I learned this as a young man in business, that you want to try to hire people smarter. Trust me on this one. It'll pay off. The fifth one, when the chips are down, count on yourself to deliver the winning punch. The heavy lifting should be done by those with the most to lose. And the sixth, email, voicemail, and texting are all good communication tools for everyday talk. When it matters, eye-to-eye contact works best. This is so true. You can't do everything through voicemail, my friends. This is a real problem today with technology, you know? And the seventh, when others doubt you and question your sincerity, use this as fuel to not only rise above, but to succeed on your terms. The eighth, when given a choice, it's best to be impatient, impractical, and imperious to what others think. You know, stay focused on the end goal. The ninth, confront your enemies. Don't run from them. Seek them out. Look them in the eye and let them know that all is good. Smile. Converse. Carry on. I always say, folks, don't run from things. Run from trouble. Just be yourself always. Well, thanks for joining me again today. Remember, get involved, get loud.